Music has a special way of touching our hearts in ways many things cannot. And if you're tuning into this podcast, you probably think so too. On each episode of Classical Post, we uncover a creative mind behind music we find particularly exceptional. Coming to you from New York, Classical Post is created and produced by Gold Sound Media, a marketing and PR agency for the performing arts industry. I'm your host, Jonathan Eifert, creative director at Gold Sound Media, and I hope you find something inspiring in this episode. For more than a year now, I've been obsessed with Tar, the 2022 Todd Field film starring Cate Blanchett as an orchestral conductor whose power plays lead to her devastating downfall. Yes, the story is gripping and suspenseful, but it's the music interlaced throughout the film that keeps me coming back. Aside from the two works performed in the film, Mahler's Fifth Symphony and Elgar's Cello Concerto, which were baked into Field's script, the music you hear throughout Tar is the result of months of work by the film's music supervisor, Lucy Bright. A specialist in the arenas of film and television scoring, Bright has worked with some of today's biggest composers, including Nico Muhly, Michael Nyman, and Volker Bertelmann, on projects ranging from Assassin's Creed to Aftersun and The Iron Claw. But what exactly does a music supervisor do on a film of this scale? Turns out it's a lot. From working with a team of on-set sound engineers who specialize in recording symphony orchestras to developing the film's Deutsche Grammophon concept album and recreating Irby Green's 1967 recording of 21 Trombones, Bright was kept busy managing countless aspects of the film's musical atmosphere across three countries. In this episode of the Classical Post podcast, I speak with Bright about the expert levels of coordination and collaboration vital to her work. Working with the Icelandic composer Hildur Gunnarsdóttir to realize Lydia Tár's compositions, and what it was like seeing Cate Blanchett raise a baton to conduct Mahler. Plus, she shares her fascinating history with modern architecture, her go-to burger place in New York City, and the therapeutic benefits of swimming in the natural springs of London's Hampstead Heath.
I'm Lucy Bright. I'm a music supervisor and music publisher, and specializing in film and TV, and working with composers who also specialize in that area.
Let's talk about aesthetics, especially in your line of work. Where do you find inspiration to do your work? You know, when you're working with composers, when you're in the role of music supervisor, where does your inspiration come from?
Well, that's so interesting. I love this question because, and I love the way you opened it up into the different areas, because I feel like music supervision, which obviously is about specifically music, but you draw on so many cultural references working with a filmmaker like that. And that definitely for me goes into particularly, I guess, art, architecture, literature. And I actually studied history of art. That was my degree at University College London. And my father was an artist. I've been around art kind of my whole life. So it's definitely a big influence. And what I love about that is often it's a big influence for directors too. You know, it's such a visual medium. And so being able to have those references and have those kind of passions about art in particular, I find constantly come up. And it's funny, actually, often maybe younger composers ask me about what my tips would be for, you know, moving into film composition. And I always say, you know, spend as much time watching films, thinking about the history of films, the history of art and architecture and literature, because so many of those shared references that you'll talk with a director about will be about that. And so you want your kind of your catalog of information and references to be as deep as possible. And definitely, yeah, art's a big one for me. I mean, thinking specifically, I would say probably 20th century art. I mean, artists like Mike Kelly would probably be one of the biggest influences on me, and particularly because of the way he made his art and thought about politics and kind of popular culture and philosophy as much as the sort of the visuals of it. So, Yeah, God, I could talk a long time on that.
No, it's excellent. Outside of art, of the actual visual art, does design, architecture, fashion, any of those other kind of creative industries influence you and with your work?
Architecture is another big one for me. I'm a bit of an architecture bore, maybe, about thinking again about 20th century architecture. I've been very lucky. I live in London and I've lived in three of the most kind of iconic modernist buildings in the city. And it kind of started out as I'd always loved that kind of architecture, but never really thought about. I grew up and lived in Victorian houses and Georgian houses and not really thought about living in these kind of modern masterpieces. And by luck, almost, I ended up, my boyfriend and I, living in the Icicon building, which is it's the first modernist building in London. It was built in 1934. It looks like a kind of ocean liner. It's sort of the next step from Art Deco. It's into the international style. It's, you know, very influenced. It's by an amazing architect called Wells Coates. But this building was also sort of designed for the purposes of artists to live in, or people with kind of in their tiny flats. It was like people with interesting lives who wouldn't necessarily be spending a lot of time at home, but would be out having fabulous lives. And so the kitchens are tiny, and they had actually a little restaurant in the apartments as well, because it was more about, like, they called it the isobar. And you'd go to the isobar and everyone would, you know, meet up there. And amazing people lived there, like Agatha Christie and Gropius and various kind of like Russian spies. And so it has this amazing history. So I was very lucky to live there. And in a way, again, it's that thing of, okay, yeah, it's a building, it's architecture, but it's a building and an architect with a vision kind of beyond just the design of it, but about how people live in it. And so I found that really inspiring.
That's so cool. I mean, what a unique story. I don't often hear that sort of thing, so that you actually experienced that. That's so cool.
I really did. And actually, when I was living there, I found that the architect's daughter was still alive. And so I managed to get a letter to her and ended up becoming friends with her. And it was amazing, because when her father had designed it and built it in 1934, she had actually lived there as a child. So it was amazing to kind of hear her stories of how this all works, and all of these incredible kind of artists and writers and whatever, all living and working in this building.
That's so cool. Describe a routine you have in place that helps you live a healthier life.
So the big thing for me is swimming in the ponds. And so I don't know if you've ever been to London, seen Hampstead Ponds, which is, you know, technically pretty central. It's like zone two of London. So it's very central, but it's in the middle of Hampstead Heath. Once you're there, you feel like you're in the country. And there are the three swimming ponds, the men's, the ladies, and the mixed ponds. And they're natural, natural spring water from the spring at the top of the hill. And I swim there all year round. And it's like absolutely it's maybe not even so much about the exercise of it. It's not really, you know, particularly in midwinter when you're only in for a few minutes, because I mean, like now it's sort of 3 degrees or something of water, and I don't wear a wetsuit, I don't wear anything, so you're only in for a couple of minutes, but you feel amazing. And you're there, you're in the city, but when you look up, all you can see is the sky, the kingfisher flying over, the little duck swimming past. So it's the most sort of perfect immersion into like a different world for the time that you're there.
Wow, that's so cool. Yeah, I used to live in London, actually, but I have never been to that part. I've been to Hampstead Heath, but not to those ponds.
That's something. Next time you're here, we'll have to go.
Yes, next time, exactly. What energizes you in life to keep creating, to keep, kind of going, keep your focus? Is there something that you can point to for energy specifically?
I think for me, energy always comes from conversations with people. And that's one of the things I missed most in COVID lockdown. And I know probably don't want to go there because we're so bored of talking about it. But I found that, you know, Zoom is amazing. Okay, technically it's great. It means we can keep in touch. But it's not that sort of random nature that you get when you just sit down and have a great conversation with someone. And the things that come up and spark your imagination because you look across the room and, you know, see a painting or, you know, someone wearing something amazing, or the person you're with mentions a film that you go back and watch. And I really missed that, yeah, that sort of random nature of conversations. So coming back to that is a joy for me. So it's always, you know, and maybe there are specific people in my life that I look to for that when I'm feeling that sort of lack of energy. And I know that they're going to inspire me like that. And there'll be, you know, filmmakers that maybe I've worked with or friends that are also filmmakers, like John McClane. I know that I'm always, if ever kind of I'm in a doldrum, I'll reach out to him and be like, can we go for a coffee? I want to hear, you know, what you're doing right now, what you're thinking about. So yeah, that sort of connection and random nature of just spending time with people is what brings my energy back.
What is one specific product you highly recommend?
Okay, so this one, and I feel bad because basically, I feel bad for myself as well, because Maison du Chocolat is my favorite chocolate shop in the world. And it's in Paris. There are several of them in Paris. Their pralines are my absolute favorite, to the point where, I mean, I used to be able to have them shipped to London, but post-Brexit, you can't have that anymore. And one of my favorite things that they do are these amazing Easter eggs. So luckily, my niece was in Paris just before Easter this year. So I sent a massive order to her to bring back. But it's one of those things that I'll almost put in a trip to Paris, like just so that I can go and get them.
That's amazing. I love that. So what restaurant or bar do you love to eat at when you're in New York City? And then obviously, what do you order there?
Okay, so my absolute first stop as soon as I get to New York is to go to Superiority Burger. And I first learned about it because my dear friend Matt Sweeney, who's an amazing musician and one of the most loved people in the world, is an investor in it. So he when it first opened, he's like, you've got to go and try it. And at that point, it's tight on the Lower East Side, this tiny little space that only had like two or three seats in it. So you kind of go in and order and then sit out on the street eating. And it's all vegetarian and vegan. Amazing chef called Brooks Headley. And he was actually just in London. And I felt like, because he's one of the people I respect most in the world in terms of food, I felt this massive pressure because he wanted to go for dinner and I didn't know where to take him. I was like, I've got to make this the best place in London. So we did. We had an amazing with his gorgeous girlfriend, Mariko Monroe, and we went for dinner. But Superiority Burger, I mean, the classic burger is incredible. It's just, I mean, it's one of those sort of vegan burgers that you don't even think about. But any day he has special, the ice cream every day, he has a special ice cream, small menu, but everything's perfect. And the tiny little space just closed, and he's actually got a new space that's about to open. So that any day now will be open in a kind of a bigger, more like diner sit down sort of vibe. So I can't wait to be back to go to the new.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Let's pause for a second. Are you an artist or work at an arts organization? I founded Gold Sound Media to help you expand your audience through social media. My team and I work closely with clients around the United States, directly shaping their messaging through customized strategic content. One of our biggest success stories is our work for the Clyburn, where we drove 25 million viewers, making it one of the most watched classical music events of all time. Get in touch to speak with me directly about how Gold Sound Media can help you. Just head to goldsoundmedia.com. Now, back to the show. Thank you. tell us about your work for the new film, Tar. I really can't wait to hear what you have to say about this. So what was your role and how did this develop?
So I was music supervisor on Tar, which is this incredible film written and directed by Todd Field, starring Cate Blanchett as Lydia Tar, the titular character, and she's a conductor-composer. And I came on just before shooting, and Natalie Hayden and the whole team at Universal Pictures Music Department had been working on it for a while because obviously music was so integral to it. So a lot of the clearances, et cetera, had been done, you know, early. And the big thing for me was to come on for the shoot. So we shot in Dresden with the Dresden Philharmonic. And Cate, who had been training with the amazing Natalie Murray Beale, conductor, suddenly there we were in front of this amazing full orchestra. And there she was about to, you know, conduct Mahler 5. And it was for a music supervisor to have a project where music is so central to the whole story was, yeah, a treat of a lifetime, really. And to work with kind of expertise that everyone brought, it was amazing. And Hilda Gunnardottir wrote the music that Lydia's character is writing through the film. So I got to work with Hilda again. We've worked together several times and also as her publisher. And she is, obviously she's one of the greatest talents on the planet, but she's just a joy to work with as well. And Todd was amazing. So it just is, even though it's a big film in terms of its scale in a way, it's also a really intimate film. And the team kind of reflected that. There was a lot of time of just, you know, me and Todd and Mona, the editor, and Hilda, and a lot of talking, a lot of working out how we were going to create these orchestral scenes that, you know, often in films, I'm sure you've seen many films where you may have been disappointed in how an orchestra was represented or the sound of the orchestra or that there was miming. And there are lots of reasons for that to happen, not least kind of money often. But the big thing for us is like, no miming. This has to be, you know, the audience has to feel like they are in Cate's shoes. So when, you know, when that downbeat happens and that, you know, first note's played, like it has to sound like you are there with the orchestra. And it was amazing. And everyone really kind of was behind that vision. So I hope you agree that was the big.
Yeah, no, it's so cool. And from my understanding, Cate was actually conducting, right? I mean, it wasn't like she was just whatever. Yeah,
absolutely. And she would also be the first to say, you know, she is not a conductor now just because she it's a whole other thing. But the incredible dedication and also the orchestra and how they really bought into that, you know, and didn't treat her like, oh, a Hollywood actress, what's she doing here with, you know, with us who have dedicated our lives to this. And, you know, they were amazing and really got into the spirit of it and supported Cate, and they worked beautifully together. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's so cool. Tell us a little bit more, though, about the process of a music supervisor in this role. I mean, some more of the, I don't know, like a case in point, kind of like an illustration of how you fit in and kind of shaped some of the music in the film.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. Music supervisor is a funny role in a way because it can mean different things on different projects. And, you know, some smaller budget projects, maybe, you know, you are there doing absolutely everything. So lovely film after some that I've also worked on this year. I was doing everything from the clearances to the creative, the kind of, you know, suggesting the songs and then working with the director to make sure that the song she wanted, she could have, and helping to, you know, suggest the composer and all of those things. On Tar, because it's a much bigger project and a studio project as well, so you've got the amazing music department who were already on the clearance side of things and licensing. So it was more about the conversations with Todd and making sure that the practical side of creating his vision. So for example, working with the specialist sound team who came on. So it wasn't just the film sound team. It was the special sound team from the Netherlands who are used to recording orchestras. So kind of navigating all of that, bringing all of that together. And then funny things like There was a song that Todd really wanted and called Here's That Rainy Day, which obviously is a standard. So the publishing was fine, but the recording he wanted, we just couldn't track down the master owner. And so I sort of came up with a plan of basically recreating this exactly. It's 1967 recording of 21 trombones. And so we ended up on this kind of little odyssey of Todd and Mona and I flying to the Netherlands to record with this trombone ensemble there, the New Trombone Collective, who had actually made a recording of the same piece. So they kind of knew what to do. So, and then finding the soloist that Todd wanted, who happened to be on holiday in the Rockies. So we had to get him into a studio in Calgary to record his solo. Those funny things, which you sort of, you know, it's 90 seconds of music in the background and film. Probably no one's even going to think about it, except it just sounds nice. But one of my, you know, many jobs was like, how do we make this happen for Todd, rather than kind of saying, giving up and saying, no, you know, we can't have that. Choose another song.
Yeah, it's fascinating. And just all the great lengths that you and probably many other people in the film went to pull this off. You know, that sometimes things aren't maybe noticed, like you're saying, it's in the background, but it really is very involved. And there's a lot of effort and expertise put out to achieve the end goal.
Really is. And that's one of the things I loved about working with Todd, is how specific he was and how he was up for being like, yeah, let's go on this international trip to make it happen, because it meant something to him. He, you know, he wanted that song and in a very specific way.
Yeah, it's so cool. So there's the film, and then there's the Deutsche Grammophon concept album. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Yes. And what, hopefully, you know, the connection is, or?
Yeah, because yeah. This is, I mean, I don't think I can think of another film that has this accompanying concept album. So, you know, it's almost like a companion piece to the film. You know, you'll see the film and you'll get so much music from that. And then you can go to the soundtrack and you can album, and you can hear the pieces that you only hear little parts of in the film. You know, you never hear the complete of the Mahler 5 or the Elgar Cello Concerto or the piece that Hilda wrote for Tar's character. You know, you hear little snippets of it as it's being written, as it's being kind of considered. And then you can hear the full piece on this album. So they really are, they work hand in hand. And like I said, I can't quite think of another film where that happened. So again, it was like huge kudos to Todd, to Natalie and the Universal team, and to DG for being up for this. Like, it's a unique project.
Yeah. It is so cool. And especially Deutsche Grammophon is obviously kind of the big mothership, if you will, when you consider classical record labels. And so I think for them to do that is also very significant.
Totally. You know, and I love the way they bought into that. And, you know, and it's funny because, of course, Todd and I talk about it now, and he's like, if they hadn't, what would we have done? And I have no idea, because we didn't really have a plan B. You know, it had to be DG. It's spoken about in the film. It's, you know, the whole plan really was around that. So thank goodness it did, but it's beautiful. Yeah. And I'm super excited about the vinyl coming of it. This is going to be...
Oh, is it coming?
Ah. It is. So that will be in January. So that will be really special.
Very nice. Yeah, I don't think I knew that. Oh, that's good to know. Very cool. So one last question. What does success mean to you? It's personal for everyone, but, you know, when you think about your career and what you're doing in life, what does success look like for you?
It's so interesting. And I thought a lot about this question, because I think that's probably changed for me over the years, and I'm sure it does for everyone. And now I think I feel, because I feel in a more kind of settled maybe place in my career, it's really all about the artist that I'm working. When I say artist, I mean that in the, you know, the broadest sense. So either the filmmakers or the musicians, composers. But for me, when a kind of relationship sparks with an artist like that, that's the feeling of success. And even if it's something that, you know, might not be the, you know, Tar is an incredible success, and you know, obviously it's beautiful that that's happened. After Sun the same, but I think I'd have been just as excited and feel that they were as much a success because of the relationships and the, like I say, that kind of spark that happened between each of the creative parts of that. And it, yeah, it feels really, really amazing.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Classical Post. If you loved it, give us a 5-star review as it helps us reach more people. Also, remember to hit that follow button in your podcast app to get notified of new episodes.